All right, sounds good. Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli has a lot on his plate. Cuccinelli's worried about a new Washington, D.C. law governing how pest control handles vermin infestations, which may result in entire rodent families being relocated across the Potomac River into Virginia. The rat problem has come to light due to the growing infestations around the Occupy D.C. encampment. So the Occupy Wall Street crowd, they brought rats with them. Something needs to be done with these rats, but what? Cuccinelli said D.C.'s new rat law, the Wildlife Protection Act of 2010, is crazier than fiction because it requires vermin not be killed, but rather captured, preferably in families. So, oh, there's Mama, there's Papa, and there's their kids. Okay, we've got to capture them and be transferred to a wildlife rehabilitator. To make matters stickier, according to CNS, which must be, I'm not sure what CNS is, neither glue nor traps can be used in the apprehension of these rodents. The reason Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli in Virginia is concerned is because, of course, they're just going to move them across the Potomac into Virginia. So he's going to inherit the rat families. The law does not allow pest control professionals to kill the doggone rats, Cuccinelli said, told CNS News. They have to capture them, capture them in families. Not sure how you're going to figure that out with rats. Then you have to relocate them. That brings us to Virginia. Now, if we don't relocate them about 25 miles away, according to experts, rodents will find their way back. Well, an easy way to solve the problem is to cross the river. What's on the other side of the river? Virginia. So that's why he's concerned. Have to capture the rats gently in families.
Is this a serious proposal?
Yes. No, it's not a joke. Yes.
I got a serious solution to the problem. Kick out the OWSs. Get rid of those people. Throw them in jail or ship them over to Soviet Union or to China or to North Korea. They would love them there.
You have to capture them in families and move them across. Chris.
Is this our tax dollars at work?
It is indeed. Yes, sir, it is. Yes, sir. Aren't you glad that your tax money is going for something worthwhile? All right, we're in Proverbs here tonight. Proverbs. I don't think I'd want to be elected into anything in Washington, D.C. You go there and you go nuts when you get there. I was going to say. All right, Proverbs. Proverbs 21. We stopped last time down in verse 10. The soul of the wicked desireth evil. His neighbor findeth no favor in his eyes. Goes on to say in verse 11, when the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. I think we talked about this some too. When the wise is instructed, he receiveth knowledge. Now, when the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. Reminds me to say I'm not going to come out for public whippings or anything like that, but the anti-capital punishment crowd, I have mixed feelings about it, simply for the fact that I no longer trust our justice system to render justice. I think there could be nothing scarier than being before 12 of my peers, frankly, in this day and age. But for years, the anti-capital punishment crowd has said that capital punishment does not deter crime. Well, I tell you what, it doesn't deter, perhaps, other scorners. But somebody that's simple, in verse 11, when the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. I wouldn't be too inclined to break into somebody's house or do something awful. If I knew that there was a very real possibility, I would be dead within the year if I wound up murdering somebody or whatever else, right? I mean, folks, when the scorner's punished, the simple is made wise. Doesn't matter what they say. You need to punish the criminal. If it doesn't help out another criminal, maybe it'll keep somebody that's simple from becoming a criminal. When the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. And when the wise is instructed, he receiveth knowledge. When the wise is instructed, then he receiveth knowledge. Now, look at this instruction thing just again. We've seen this many times, I think. Maybe it's been a while since we went through it. But then the issue of instruction. Obviously, folks battle to get into college now or whatever else, and they're being instructed, and that's all fine. That's all good. However, some of those folks getting instructed are probably as least instructable as anybody in the world as far as truth's concerned. For instance, Bob and I were talking last night. We had a basketball game last night. He was referring to my mentioning the fact that all of our kids that either went to Anoka Ramsey for a class or else in high school had PSEO and took a literature class, every one of those kids had basically pornography shoved in their hands to read for class. Well, what's the deal with that, right? And that's the idea. What you get when you go nowadays to the average college, even fresh out of high school, going into basic English or literature, I mean, you get nonsense. You have perverted nonsense handed to you to read for a grade. And it's supposed to be enlightening, I suppose. That's not instruction. Look in Proverbs chapter 4. There's something here that goes with instruction. It says that when the wise is instructed, he receiveth knowledge. And that sounds real simple. That sounds like going and taking a class. And the fact is, it's more than taking a class. Proverbs chapter 4, and notice verse 13. There is something in connection with instruction that cannot be missed. And if your instruction does not contain this element, then it's not real instruction. Look in 4:13. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go, keep her, for she is thy life. So that is how important instruction is, correct? Look at chapter 5, verse 12. Now let me show you the connection here. And this is why the instruction, if you're really being taught the Bible, morality, spirituality, out of the Bible in church, that is why that's the best instruction you can ever get. I know really of no other instruction in the world like it. I know in the good old days, you know, if you didn't learn your multiplication tables when the teacher said you should have, you probably would have gotten a swat or a licking on your hand with a ruler or whatever, right? But that's not passable anymore. We can't do that. However, there is some truth to it. Proverbs 5, look at verse 11. No, verse 12. Say, how have I hated instruction and my heart despised reproof? Notice reproof goes hand in hand with instruction. That's what I'm trying to show you here. Look in chapter 6, verse 23, and you'll notice that for all this says about instruction, instruction is not just going and taking a class. It's not just going and sitting, you know, online and listening to something and then not getting anything or doing anything with it. That's not what instruction is. Proverbs chapter 6, I remind you about 4:13 where it says, take fast hold of instruction, let her not go, keep her, for she is thy life. 6:23, for the commandment is a lamp and the law is light and reproofs of instruction are the way of life. It said earlier, instruction is thy life. Well, the reproofs of instruction are the way of life. Now look, It's like this. Again, in the bad old days, depending on your view, if you wrote a sentence wrong for your English teacher or did the problem wrong for your math teacher, you got big red X's and frowny faces and everything so that you knew that you got it wrong. You did bad in getting it wrong because you didn't study, you didn't try, etc., etc. Nowadays, not only in math and science, but in morality, nowadays, folks are afraid to put a red mark on the paper. They're afraid of the reproof. Folks, without the reproof, instruction has no teeth. And if instruction has no teeth, you're not really going to learn it. That's why church is important. I don't know where you're going to go, frankly, and it's not just because I'm the pastor. I don't know where you're going to go and get a bawling out for your dirty thoughts. Except here. You're not going to go to the news media. You're not going to get it from the news media, right? You're not going to take a class on ethics in college and get anything. I don't know where you're going to go. That's why the church is the pillar and ground of the truth in Timothy. Because if you don't get that portion of what's here, it's not just enough to study and look and see just raw instruction, just raw material. You don't learn material without being told you're wrong. And there's just things about life that you will not learn unless you feel at least somewhat threatened. Unless you fear God, unless you feel threatened by your corruption inside, unless you realize that, you know, if I don't get this right, this could happen. Right? Folks, the reproofs of instruction are the way of life. Says in, let me look at another place here. If I can find that place. Where was I? Chapter 10, verse 17. Chapter 10, verse 17. The companion of instruction is reproof. It doesn't say rebuke, but close enough. Proverbs 10, 17. He is in the way of life that keepeth instruction. Then notice continuation. But he that refuseth reproof erreth. Now you can go to church now in tons of places and not get any reproof at all. I mean, we're just happy and wonderful and Jesus is sweet and God is nice and, you know, there is no real ramifications for being all kinds of things that you ought not be. But it's wrong. That's not real instruction. Okay? There is a reproof involved with instruction. Look in chapter 15. It really puts it together here. Proverbs 15. First of all, notice verse 5. A fool despiseth his father's instruction, and he that regardeth reproof is prudent. You see how instruction and reproof go hand in hand. Then notice verse 10. Correction is grievous unto him that forsaketh the way, and he that heedeth reproof shall die. So, reproof is connected with correction. No, you're wrong. You can't do it this way. That's not right. This is the way to do it. Folks, that's an intimate part of life. Should be an intimate part of life. That's an intimate part of church, right? That's an intimate part of why you're in your Bible and praying is because, left to yourself, you're wrong, and you won't get it right. And so God has to say, look, that's wrong. Do this, and it'll be right. Right? Look down in verse 12, 15, 12. A scorner, there's that scorner again, loveth not one that reproveth him. He will not be instructed. That is why the scorner must either be smitten or run out on a rail. It is because he will not receive reproof, therefore he cannot be instructed. Kids, if you have a friend that's a scorner, you best dump him because he's going to drag you down, right? I mean, you say, well, I just want to get him in church and get him saved. Okay, he's been in church for a while. He still hasn't gotten saved. He's still whispering behind his hand to you about the rules and the standards and all the undesirable things that you see here. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Okay? If the scorner really can only be smitten or run out on a rail, because he's not going to be instructed, because he's not going to be reproved. And, you know, a scorner doesn't always have to snarl his nose outwardly. Sometimes a scornful attitude is kept very much inward, right? I can have a scornful attitude, maybe you don't even know it. But if I have that attitude, I am not instructable because I am not reprovable. If you can't be told you're wrong and say, you know what, you're right, I'm wrong, then you're not instructable. Look in chapter 15, verse 31. The ear that heareth the reproof of life abideth among the wise. He that refuseth instruction despiseth his own soul. But he that heareth reproof getteth understanding. The fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom. I mean, that's why the fear of the Lord is so important, because fearing God, you know that God's always right, and you know that where you cross Him, you're always wrong. You should be able to be reproved and be instructed out of that. That's why the fear of the Lord is so important. But you cannot detach reproof from instruction. I'm not saying, you know, you have to learn 2 plus 2 or I'm going to punch you out between the eyes. It doesn't have to be like that. But the idea is that as far as things going right or going wrong spiritually, as far as instruction is concerned, if there's no reproof, if there's no price, if there's no cost to doing wrong, then where are you? Right? Back to Proverbs 21. Back to Proverbs 21:11. When the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. And when the wise is instructed, and part of that instruction is reproof, he receiveth knowledge. The righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked. The righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked. Now, it doesn't say the righteous man envieth the house of the wicked, which is the common thing today. The righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked, because so often you wind up envying the wicked, and that man's lot in life is not what you want. Look, folks, you and I do not know how miserable the wicked are, even when they apparently prosper in this life, right? You hear stories about, you know, Brother Spurgeon, that sort of thing, where, you know, an exceedingly wicked man on the outside and with the rough exterior, but you don't know what's going on inside. And so it is with the rich, the wicked. Sometimes, okay, you take some of the more famous ones of our day, the George Soroses and the movie stars and whoever, Madonna and I don't know whoever, Britney Spears, whatever. One thing you don't know is what's going on with them inside. And nowadays, all folks see is the outward stuff, and they just want what they've got, not knowing the condemnation and the misery that comes with it, right? That says there, the righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked. You better consider the house of the wicked. Let me show you some other things you should consider. Look back in chapter 6. Chapter 6 of Proverbs 6:6. There are things that folks don't think about too much these days. You as a Bible believer have a much better chance of doing it because you're always having it pointed out to you if you're reading, if you're praying, and so on. But all too often, folks do not consider these things. For instance, Proverbs 6:6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. When's the last time you saw a welfare recipient squatting down on the sidewalk looking at an ant? They don't, because if they did and genuinely considered it, then they'd realize the preparation involved, and without a king or whatever, these ants are scrambling around to make sure they can live through the winter, right? Sluggards don't consider things. For instance, something else. Look in chapter 23, verse 1. Proverbs 23:1. some things that men don't consider too much anymore. 23:1. When thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee, and put a knife to thy throat, if thou be a man given to appetite. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Okay, you need to sit at a rich man's table, and before you start longing for the meat that he has every day, you need to maybe consider the daintiness of that meat. You need to consider where that goes, right? You need to consider something. You are not called to be envious of somebody else's lot in life. You're called to take what God's given you and make the best of it, right? Look in Proverbs chapter 24 and look at verse 32. 24:32. Some things to consider. Back in verse 30. Excuse me just a second. If I don't blow my nose, I'm going to have a really disgusting sneeze, embarrass myself, and get stuff all over my tie. So, 24:30. I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. Lo, it, that field, that vineyard, was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. And I saw and considered it, I considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. You know, folks, it's amazing. You know, I recently heard about this girl, young girl, who got pregnant, of course, out of wedlock high school. And all of her friends in school were envious because she's made now the gravy train. She's now going to have money coming in from having this baby. It's the welfare mindset, right? Okay, that is not the vineyard you want. Man, those folks go down that road for a few years, about 20 years having kids right and left. And boy, they wind up at 45 and 50 years old. Go down into those ghettos and housing projects, folks. Those are some miserable, low-life, trashy women. You do not want that lot, okay? I know it's the popular thing these days. It's amazing in a place called the land of opportunity that such a mindset could take place here, right? Nevertheless, that's where we're at. Folks have been exploited now. Social classes have been exploited now for the better part of 75 years. And now we are training young women to be baby factories starting at about 15 years old. And they just pump them out one after another, and they get money for them. Right? Okay. That's the slothful vineyard. Chris, did you have something? No? Okay. Proverbs. Let me see. Where was it going next with this? Look in 28:22. You need to consider these things. 28:22. You ought to consider those things so that you do not make the mistake of ever going there and doing those things. Proverbs 28:22. Consider them. He that hasteth to be rich hath an evil eye, and considereth not that poverty shall come upon him. He that hasteth to be rich. How many guys have gone to Vegas, for that matter, Hinckley, with a pocket full of money and with visions of being rich and hitting the jackpot, right? And left with nothing, right? Look in chapter 29, verse 7. Just kind of hit and miss with some of these things. 29:7, the righteous considereth the cause of the poor, but the wicked regardeth not to know it. The righteous wants to know why this guy's poor, right? He wants to know how this guy plows, because there is a lot of waste in the tillage of the poor, right? So, where The righteous goes into a scenario where somebody's begging for money and has these great and vast needs. He wants to know why you're there. How did you get here? The wicked only wants to give the guy money. You understand what I'm saying? Folks, we're in an election year. This stuff is played out every day of the week now in the newspapers. It's an election year. They have now trained an entire generation of people to vote after who will give them the most free money. And that's all it is. That's all it is. So consider those things. Proverbs 21, verse 12. The righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked. He should look on the house of the wicked and see that no matter how nice the house is, no matter the fountain in the front of the house, no matter the Mercedes parked at the house, no matter the number of kids running around the house with, you know, $300 tennis shoes on and all that kind of stuff, he needs to consider the house of the wicked, because the house of the wicked is going to fall. Back to verse 12. The righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked, but God overthroweth the wicked for their wickedness. Now, you know, one of the things that we've always talked about here and that I know that sometimes folks wrestle with is, here you have people, some people that you know, perhaps some people that have hurt you, that seem to get away with wickedness year after year after year after year. Right? Just, I'm sure you can name folks from your own past. You know folks in the media. You know folks that you've heard about. How can the Rolling Stones just keep going on and on and on? How is it that Liz Taylor could have lived such a long, quote-unquote, healthy life, just going on and on and on? All I can say is God knows how to overthrow the wicked, right? And sometimes that overthrow is not as obvious, not how you would do it. You would smite them with boils, make them suffer, and then let them go to the dust if you were God. God sometimes can do things much more subtly than that, right? Sometimes it's about inner misery. You think about the Belushis and the movie stars in this world that have just frittered themselves away into drugs and just, they're just addicts. They can't even see straight. I know that I don't have a lot of mercy for him, and I laugh at him still. But can you imagine the emotional torment? You look at his end. Think about Michael Jackson. Can you imagine the emotional turmoil that little twerp went through for whatever, how did he live nearly 45 years, something like that? And by the time this thing is over, this guy is a warped, weirdo fruitcake, right? Well, guess what? You don't get there by simple means. I mean, this guy went down a long, twisted road for a long time, was miserable and overthrown for a long time before he wound up where he went, right? And now he's in hell. My point is, like with Peter, God knows how to reserve the wicked for the day of judgment. He knows how to overthrow somebody, and you don't know the miseries they're going through. I'm not saying that I should be able to pick them either. I'm just saying you don't know what's going through folks' minds, either good or bad. Back to verse 12. The righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked. You wisely consider that. You are wise to consider it. You're wise to look upon it and look at it critically and skeptically and make sure you don't go down the road that this guy went down. Right? But God overthroweth the wicked for their wickedness. Verse 13. Whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. Notice, whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor. Now, that's not at the cry of the slothful. That's not at the cry of the socialist. That's not at the cry of the communist. That's not at the cry of the commie lib. But whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, that is a guy or a lady who has legitimately fallen upon hard times is doing all they can. If a man will not work, neither should he eat, right? Doing all that he can possibly to make it. And if you don't listen to that guy, then you may get it in the neck yourself someday, right? Doesn't say you have to listen to somebody that's pumping out babies, you know, two a year nearly, and is trying to, you know, just make a living in time over having somebody else's kids year after year after year for decades, which is exactly what's going on in our country. Look, you know that, right? I mean, that is exactly what's happening. And they have undermined an entire generation of people. So now, you even have kids that, you know, normally you wouldn't think would be thinking that way that do think that way. What's wrong? Back to Chris. Verse 13. Whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. A gift in secret pacifieth anger. The idea there being is we're not talking here about political gifts. We're not talking about buying somebody off. We're talking here about you and your wife had a fight. Take her some roses, brother. That pacifies anger. Look, that's wisdom. That's not manipulation. That's not exploitation. Right? We're not here talking about political manipulation. There are some passages about gifts that are ruinous in the respect that you're trying to buy favors and that sort of thing. That's not what this is talking about. This is about you knowing perhaps you've offended somebody or your friend needs encouragement in something, that sort of thing. Well, in that case, that gift pacifieth anger. Look in Ecclesiastes 10. This is not an exploitative gift. There's a time to pacify. A gift in secret pacifieth anger. If you and your wife were crossways when you left home this morning and things have not gotten better, well, brother, take her some candy. Chocolate solves a lot of problems. If you want to give her a double whammy, bring her a rose too. 12 roses, man. But that's not you manipulating her, right? That is just simply you taking the first step back. That's not manipulation. That's pacifying anger. Now, Ecclesiastes 10:4 gives you another place where it's good to pacify. If the spirit of the ruler rather rise up against thee, leave not thy place, for yielding pacifieth great offenses. There's a time to yield with a blow. I mean, if the guy is coming after you, maybe the time is not necessarily to rise up and bump chests with him, but yield with it and back away one step, and that might pacify anger. Correct? Back to Proverbs 14, a gift in secret pacifieth anger, and a reward in the bosom strong wrath. Verse 15, it is joy to the just to do judgment. It's an amazing statement in light of today's Christianity. It is joy to the just to do judgment. For the umpteenth time, you are called to judge. You are supposed to judge. You'll be happy that you judge some things. One day, folks, one day, your kids are going to be grown up and gone. And if you've raised them godly and consistently, eventually that stuff comes back. In general, there's always, I understand there's a bad apple here or there, and sometimes it doesn't work. You know, there's not a set, you know, amount that it works, but if you do right and are consistent and invest, reprove, instruct, and so on, someday that thing comes back and you will reap that reward. I'm serious. Look, you know, folks these days in Christianity are always trying to figure out what they can get away with and still be a Christian. And I got news for you. If you'll go the second mile for long enough, one day that'll come back and you will reap the dividends of that. It says there in Proverbs chapter 21 verse 15, it is joy to the just to do judgment. I mean, it is not fun to say no to my kid in something he or she really, really, really has their heart set on. You know, it's not easy. But still there is joy that comes from doing right, and eventually the thing comes all the way back around, and the right thing is the right thing, and that brings joy with it, right? Now, there's another way to look at this, too. There's another side to this. Look in Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15. This time, notice verse 21. Where it is joy to the just to do judgment. Notice in this case, folly is joy to him that is destitute of wisdom. But a man of understanding walketh uprightly. Well, folly is joy to him that is destitute of understanding. Those that are destitute of understanding, they go to college for instruction, but without reproof. They join a frat house, and they party their lives away until their daddy's money runs out. Folly is joy to them that are destitute of judgment. Now, that's not the case with the wise. Again, Proverbs 21, and down in verse 15, it is joy to the just to do judgment. That means that modern Christianity is missing out on joy. So they've replaced joy with rock bands and touchy-feely little thingamajigs. Because they have no joy, because they don't do judgment. The joy of the Lord is your strength. God gives you joy for doing right, making right judgments. Sometimes those judgments are hard. Sometimes the joy isn't immediate. But it does come back around. Proverbs 21, verse 15. It is joy to the just to do judgment. Not just no judgment, but to do judgment. But destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity. The man that wandereth out of the way of understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead. That is pretty ominous there. Look in Proverbs 106 for a second. Psalm 106, I'm sorry. Did I say Proverbs? I dare you to find Proverbs 106. Psalm 106. Psalm 106, 28, and in this case talking about the Israel joining themselves to Baal in Moab. Verse 28, they joined themselves also unto Baal Peor and ate the sacrifices of the dead. I think there's two meanings there. In one case, these folks are eating sacrifices, of course, that are dead. But they're also eating the sacrifices of the dead. That is, the congregation they're in, they're all dead in sins, and they're eating their sacrifices, their vain, false God sacrifices, right? Well, back in Proverbs 21:16, the man that wandereth out of the way of understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead. There is some ominous stuff there as far as Old Testament salvation is concerned. For instance, if you wander out of the way of understanding the Bible, God's law, then you're among the congregation of the dead. That is, you are dead in trespasses and sins, which means the Old Testament, again, was not about just faith and grace. It was about law and the righteousness that is of the law. Now, if you want to apply this to me and you, the man that wandereth out of the way of understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead. If you venture out into the world and you're going to go the world's way, you're out among dead people. Okay, they're dead in trespasses and sins. Their wisdom's dead. Their art, their literature is dead. Their wisdom is dead. It's worldly, but it's dead. And that's what you're living in. If you're in the world, that's what you're living in. You're living among corpses. You're living among dead things. Everything that they have, it's highly esteemed, but evolution, folks, sorry, evolution's dead. There's no life to be given from it. It is nothing but corruptive, pollutive. It's from the congregation of the dead. It is dead itself. you live among dead things. Okay? If you depart from the way of understanding. Verse 17. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. Well, he that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. Well, you know these passages. Look in 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 3. The cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, the lusts of other things, and the pleasures of this life enter in and choke the word. What you take pleasure in is among the most important things that you can imagine. I didn't say yet. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. And notice here the peril is really about what dwells in men's hearts, right? For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, and the last thing, lovers of pleasures, more than lovers of God. They love pleasure. Look in Titus, just a page or so over. Titus 3:3. This should remind you of where you were, so you ought not still be there, right? You're to speak evil of no man, verse 2, to be no brawlers but gentle, showing all meekness unto all men. For we ourselves also were sometimes foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving diverse lusts and pleasures, serving pleasures. Serving not just the lusts, but serving pleasures, right? Living in malice and envy, hateful, hating one another. These folks over here are lovers of pleasure. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. Now, on the other hand, let's see this from God's perspective. Psalm 16. Verse 11. This is connected to the prophecy, of course, of Christ. In verse 10, thou shalt will not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine holy one to see corruption. But notice, thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. Now, we just got through studying about joy coming from doing judgment. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. If you want to love pleasure, wait till you get to heaven, and then you can love pleasure. Look in chapter 36 of Psalms. That'll be the last thing we do tonight. Psalm 36. Psalm 36. Start with verse 7. How excellent is thy loving kindness, O God! Therefore the children of men put their trust under the shadow of thy wings. They shall be abundantly satisfied with the fatness of thy house, and thou shalt make them drink of the river of thy pleasures. For with thee is the fountain of life, in thy light shall we see light. But the fountain of thy, the river of thy pleasures. Okay? Don't love the pleasure here. The pleasures down here are deceitful. The deceitfulness of sin, right? False pleasure. This is not the real thing. Questions or comments? All right, let's sing one then here before we go. Let's sing number 452. appreciate y'all coming out tonight on a windy, cold night. Reminder, now tomorrow night, Institute, we start at 6, new class, so make sure and bring those new books, right? 6 o'clock tomorrow night. We'll pause for a word of prayer here and be dismissed. Father, again, thank you for safety and health, Lord. And we've gotten off pretty easy this year so far with roads and all. We are reminded on a night like tonight that we need you all the time. And Father, we're not the only idiot on the road. There's lots of other idiots out there. And we are grateful for your goodness to us. We know that safety is of the Lord. We pray tonight that you will be with the prayers that we've prayed, the prayers we've requested. Ask you to answer those things. Help those that need grace and help and mercy. And Father, we pray you get us back here first tomorrow night, then Saturday and Sunday as well. In Jesus' name.